How is it that the ultimate prize in the most macho sport ever invented is a piece of jewelry?
We talk football?
We can always talk football.
I just want the team that I want one time.
You see things other people don't see.
Rewind that back to the start of the play.
That's one of the things I love about you. All that matters is what you think. Write your own story, Sonny.
And welcome out to the Flix Junkies podcast. I am John Clyde with Travis Poppleton.
Hello, John.
And Curtis Linnell.
Hi, John.
There we are. That clip you just heard was actually from Draft Day, the new movie from Ivan Reitman, of all people, who directed Ghostbusters, did that one. But we're going to be chatting about that today. It's opening up this weekend. And coincidentally, the NFL draft is like the same week.
Really?
What are the odds?
Think they planned that?
I don't think so. I think it was just a happy coincidence. But we will be talking about Draft Day. We've also got some Star Wars news that we're going to chat about. I don't know why I said that in the form of a question, but we have some Star Wars news that we're going to talk about. And as always, we've got our picks that we're going to go over as well. But first of all, guys, welcome back to the show. And all of you out there, thanks for listening and tuning back in. You can actually get all of our shows on flixjunkies.com. That's FLICKSJUNKIES. You can also check it out on OK.com, which is one of our sponsors. And they have a great website where you can rate movies and get an idea of what an age appropriateness level is. Maybe it's a PG-13, but you're still not sure if you're okay with your 12, 13-year-old going to see it. You can jump on there and see what other parents have said about the film and where that age rating lies. And you get to review the movie yourself, which is great. They've also got tons of movie news and a lot of other stuff, and actually articles from me, Kurt, and Travis are popping up on there all the time. Really interesting stuff, and actually a lot of the stuff that we talk about here on the show. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, we're right there on Twitter at FlixJunkies. And yeah, we're always down for a good little chat. For example, we don't have a retro review this week, but we do next week. That I know Travis is really excited about.
Yeah, we're doing Last Starfighter next week, which right. is way cool.
And how did we get that?
We got that from Twitter.
From Twitter. Somebody on Twitter reached out, said we should check it out. A fan of ours, and we loved hearing from him. And you know what? We're probably going to hook him up with some swag for it.
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
I'm going to have to find that one. I haven't seen that in over 20 years.
You know, I have been seeing it in the Walmart. I almost stopped by Walmart to pick you guys up a copy because I've been seeing it in those $5 bins.
Oh, shut up. Really?
Really? Yeah. All right.
Wow. So check it out. I think.
Well, there you go. If you have $5, everybody, check out. Go get The Last Starfighter at Walmart and you can chat with us about it. But I'm kind of looking forward to watching that again because, again, it's been years since I've seen it.
Yeah. As far as film history goes, though, it's a major player. And I think a lot of people forget that. So I can't wait to talk about that aspect as well.
It made me realize, though, it's Jeff Bridges, right?
No, that's Starman.
Oh, that's right.
In fact, I don't think a single star came out of The Last Starfighter.
that's
right. A pretty small cast. Yeah,
I forgot about that. But whoops. Anyway, but yeah, we're going to be talking Last Starfighter next week. But again, the way we heard about that was on Twitter. One of our fans recommended it with the hashtag retro review. If there's a movie you want us to watch, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know. Win movie tickets, win t-shirts, whatever it may be. So make sure you do it, all right?
Okay.
Thanks, sure. Travis. Anyway, guys, let's get started this week. Let's do some picks, shall we?
Yeah.
So for those of you who may not be familiar, every week we take a look at Redbox, Netflix, and Amazon Prime. Check out what you should be watching on each of those platforms. And this week, let's start off with a Travis in Amazon Prime.
Oh, great. Yeah, let's go into this. Before we do, I do need just one second, though. Last week, if you were listening to the podcast, I recommended, without ever seeing the movie, Nanny Diaries. And I told you I would watch it, and so I did. And it was terrible, but I would like to remind you that I predicted that. As a prequel to Captain America, it wasn't very good. I suspect, if anybody took my recommendation seriously, I suspect they made it through 15 minutes and turned it off. And it was that good. It's worth 15 minutes of your time.
It's worth 15 minutes.
If anyone actually watched the entire movie, I'm really sorry. You know, I obviously have to apologize because it was terrible. As penance, I did finish the movie, though.
Right. Okay. You also watched Mean Girls last week off of my recommendation.
I did watch Mean Girls. And my comment to John was, I get it. I get why people enjoyed it. I think 20 years from now, whoever's hosting the Flix Junkies will be doing a retro review of Mean Girls, and they'll be talking about how much they loved it at that time. That's what I think.
Okay. Did you laugh at all?
Honestly, at the end of that.
That was a lot of radio silence there.
But I get it. Like, I think at the right age, I would have really fell in love with that movie. And so, you know, it was good. It was fun. It was like a, what was the Alicia Silverstone movie?
Oh, Clueless.
Clueless. It was kind of like that.
That's, it was almost like an updated version-ish.
Yeah, that's Clueless, that was the vibe I got.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I still stand by it. If you didn't watch it, I'd say still check it out. But the other one that I do want to mention really quick is last week we talked about how you went to the Grand Budapest Hotel and really enjoyed it, the Wes Anderson film.
I did, yeah.
And we found out that you had never seen Bottle Rocket, which was Wes Anderson's first movie, and you got a chance to see that this week as well.
This is true. I was on a John and Curtis.
He was.
catch up on my recommendations. And Bottle Rocket was fantastic. And I think the best thing about Bottle Rocket for me was I know Wes Anderson's later stuff, and this is not like that. So it was so interesting to look at a really early Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson, and Wes Anderson and see kind of, it was almost like they were afraid to go quirky, so they stayed in this mainstream.
Yeah.
On one level, but on the other hand, it was so not mainstream. It's an interesting film.
I love the movie. I would say if you're not a Wes Anderson fan, if you don't quite get to that quirkiness of Wes Anderson, there's still a good chance you're actually going to like this movie.
Agreed. And if you want to get why people really dig Owen Wilson, because I came in, like Owen Wilson shows up in Shanghai Noon, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know why everyone likes this guy, but he's likable. If you don't get where he's coming from, definitely go check out Bottle Rocket, because I have a whole new appreciation for him.
Yeah, for sure.
And he helped write that, Bottle Rocket with Wes Anderson.
Yeah. And I think every Owen or Wilson brother that's ever been born is in that movie, too.
Yeah, all three of them.
But all right, now catching up to this week, Amazon Prime. I think Travis has a bit more confidence in this one than he did The Nanny Diaries.
Yeah, so this is great. So if anybody watches silent movies, or if you have not watched or appreciated a silent movie yet, this is one that I recommend with my whole heart. When I was first studying film in Moore Park, California, we had a Buster Keaton segment, and one of the first movies we watched of his was a movie called Steamboat Bill Jr., which I love. This is not the movie I'm recommending, but it's a movie I love. And it was the first time when I was watching a silent movie where it didn't feel like homework, it didn't feel like an assignment, and I was actually laughing out loud because Buster Keaton just has this this stone face way about him that cracks me up. And if you ever get into silent movies, one of the first questions you're going to be asked is Keaton or Chaplin? And you're going to have to make that decision yourself. But with me, no question, I'm a Buster Keaton fan. And a couple weeks ago on the show, we had Cinco Paul, and he recommended, loosely, the movie The General, which is now on Amazon Prime. fine film. And it's better than just a comedy. Like, if you want to see how crazy these early actors were and how they put themselves out there in very, very dangerous ways, I mean, the stunts that they're doing, everyone talks about how cool Jackie Chan was, for doing his own stunts. Just go back and look at some of these physical comedians, because they do some of the craziest things, and luckily they're all okay, or they were okay at that time. And it's just so much fun to watch, because you know it's real. You know they're actually doing these crazy things. But it's a Civil War movie. It's a Civil War comedy. A guy's trying to enlist, but he's too valuable to the railroad. Eventually someone's kidnapped, and it's kind of this whole train caper kind of film, and it's just really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, so I got thinking about this film a lot after Cinco Paul, who's one of the co-writers of Despicable Me, Despicable Me 2, Horton Hears a Who, and you can actually catch his episode on our website, flicksjunkies.com, and listen to that again. But I think you bring up a really fascinating point, is the fact that all the crazy stuff you see them doing in this, I mean, like the almost being hit by a train, you know, all these different things, they didn't have all this movie magic that they have now. They were actually doing these things.
One of the most famous things you'll see over and over again is a guy standing there where part of the house comes falling down, and as it falls down, right, luckily he just happens to be standing where the window is. This is Buster Keaton. Buster Keaton created this in Steamboat Bill Jr. There's this big storm scene, and at the time it was just insanely dangerous. If he wasn't standing in the right place, or even just far enough back so it clipped his head, I mean, that's death. And these early actors were doing this because they wanted to laugh, and it was funny, and it was really interesting to watch, and it's been repeated over and over and over again.
And that's what's great about it, too, is the fact that all these huge stunts that were going on back then, number one, they were the stars of the movie that were doing it.
Right, exactly.
And number two, it was to get laughs. It wasn't to get, you know, like the spectacle. It was to make people laugh.
So in this scene, we will risk Buster Keaton's life, and hopefully the
to get some chuckles.
Yeah, the audience will giggle.
Some of my favorite comedians nowadays, like, they reference, like, Buster Keaton, the Marx Brothers, like, you know, people like Conan O'Brien, like, he just worships those guys. And it's like, those are like the pioneers of pretty much the comedy world nowadays. Like,
absolutely.
The early day guys. And I haven't seen The General all the way through. I've seen clips from it, but I have not watched it all the way through yet.
I'll say, in my opinion, it is less funny than Steamboat Bill Jr., but it's more fun to watch because they're on the trains and they're shooting cannons and they're doing all sorts of crazy fun things. So it's more of a spectacle to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking to actually just have a good time and laugh, I always put Steamboat Bill Jr. on, like, late at night if I'm trying to fall asleep, and I'll chuckle a few times before I fall.
Yeah, I do think it's amazing because it's physical humor, obviously.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not kind of the cheap physical humor that we get with some of the, you know, more recent films and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's as highbrow physical humor as you can get, I guess.
Yeah, I'll say, honestly, and I think Steamboat Bill Jr. is on Amazon Prime as well. And there's a scene where he's trying to get his father out of jail, and he's brought this loaf of bread that's chuck full of, like, tools that he'll be able to chisel his way out of jail. But his dad isn't getting it, and so he's making all these little gestures that only his dad would understand that the guard would never catch. And that sequence was the first time that I was laughing out loud in a silent film. It's just really clever, and because there's no words, it all, like you said, it's all physical, but it's mm-hmm. not, oh, I slipped on a banana peel. Like, yeah. They're really going for clever things.
Right. No, I think that's a great pick, and if anything, it's just film history, you
Absolutely.
Know? And you can be one of those pompous people that's like, I've seen The General.
Right.
You haven't watched it?
Yeah,
Buster
exactly.
Buster Keaton, yeah.
And when you're asked that question, Keaton or Chaplin, you'll have something to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is too bad because not that Buster Keaton's not famous, but a lot of times he's definitely in that shadow of Charlie Chaplin.
For sure.
Which isn't really fair to him and what he did and pioneered, so... Yeah, that's me. That's me trying to sound much smarter and wiser than I truly am. But The General on Amazon Prime. There you go. Thanks, Travis. Yeah. Kurt, Redbox this week. What are we going with?
All right. Let's go with... Let me pick one. Just kidding. I'm going with The Way, Way Back. Last year, 2013, my favorite films were Walter Mitty with The Way, Way Back and Mud. It's a pretty close tie for all of them. But The Way, Way Back, I thought was just a great film. Written by Nate Faxon and Jim Rash, that helped write The Descendants and actually won an Academy Award for it.
Mm-hmm.
They say this script was actually on the blacklist for screenwriters in 2006, they said.
Yeah, what the blacklist is, just to give you an idea, they're screenplays that have been written that haven't necessarily been picked up yet, but they're put on the blacklist as what are supposed to be the greatest scripts out there,
unproduced
screenplays.
Yeah, and they said that script actually is what landed the job for The Descendants, to write for The Descendants. But they finally got it made, and they were able to direct it themselves. And it's just a good summer fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's got our Steve Carell, Toni Collette, John's personal favorite.
Sam Rockwell.
You'll never be a bigger fan of Sam Rockwell than John.
I do like Sam Rockwell.
But he is actually fantastic in the film. But it's just a good, fun movie. It's got Liam James, for those who watch Psych. Big Psych
fans.
He's the young Sean back in the day. But it's just a good coming-of-an-age story. I mean, it's nothing. They're not breaking new ground here. But just the way they filmed it and the way it's done and the acting and everything, it was just fun from start to finish. It was just like an enjoyable movie. And you get really into this character, this kid, and you feel for him. And you just really relate to his character. But I don't know what it was about it, but it was just, after it was over, I was like, that was just a fantastic film. And I have yet to meet anyone that hasn't liked The Way, Way Back. But maybe Travis is going to change that right now.
No, I'm a fan.
All right, sweet.
John recommended this to me last year. This was one of your top five favorites for last year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I would have never, ever made that connection between Psych and this movie. So thank you. I've learned something new as well.
Yeah, with this, I loved this movie. And if you guys have ever listened to the show before, you know I obviously really like this movie. But one of the things that I thought was so great was just, it's a movie that not necessarily a lot happens, you know, like it's not a lot of action, you know, it's not like these big set pieces and stuff. It's just kind of a well-told story. And I'll be honest, it was kind of... It kind of gave me anxiety at times, remembering being like 14 years old, you know, and like the issues that you're dealing with at 14 that really aren't quite as big of a deal as you think they are, but just remembering being back in that time. I thought that they really nailed kind of being a teenager in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Nailed everything. I mean, we worked at a little skating park, water park growing up, and just the things he went through was just like so relatable, so fun.
Yeah, I think it's a great pick. You put in the 29 cent guarantee?
Easily 29 cent guarantee. I might put 30 cents towards that.
30 cents?
Oh, yeah.
If you get the movie and you don't like it, Kurt will refund 30 cents of your purchase. So here's a question asked. So technically it's a teen movie, if you will. No one could see me do my air quotes. Sorry about that, radio listeners. But this is technically like a teen movie, and it's PG-13. But where would you guys put it on a rating scale? I'm not asking what you think it is on OK.com. I'm asking where you would put it personally.
I would, because there is a little element of drugs in it, a little bit of language.
And a little bit of sex.
Yeah.
A little bit. I would say I'd go with a 13.
I'd say 14. But to note, I haven't seen this since last year, and I really wasn't watching it for content issues. So I'm guessing based on my loose memory, probably about 14.
I'd say about 14. That's actually where it is on OK.com. It's at a 14 plus. Yeah, get out, Curtis.
You said what is okay, you thought what our opinion
But
was.
I would say that's about right. Like, don't go into this thinking it's a family film. Mm-hmm. It's not a family film. It is funny. It's got some really funny parts in it, but it's also a drama. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, you know, some kind of heavy story elements going on and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I think this is a great pick. I love this movie. I should stop now because I'll just keep going on and on about it. I've done that more than once already on this show. So, all right, great pick. The Way, Way Back on Redbox.
All right, John.
Thanks, Curtis.
This is your turn, and I think we've redeemed ourselves from 42 and... I hate to keep bringing that up, but 42 and The Nanny Diaries.
Well, that and you didn't love Mean Girls, so... Right, so I gotta step it up, right?
We have two really good ones so far.
All right, I'm actually going a little bit old school on this one this week for Redbox. It's Netflix. It's actually a film from 1988. I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah.
Anyway, from 1988, it's The Great Outdoors with John Candy and Dan Aykroyd, and I love this movie. I think it's hilarious. I'll be the first one to admit it might be one of those ones, if you didn't see it like I did when I was a kid the first time and thought it was so funny, maybe you're not going to find it quite as funny, but still, John Candy, I mean, when that guy was in his prime, he was just hilarious, and that's totally what this movie is. It's quirky, it's a little bit different, but I think it's a lot of fun. And it's a John Hughes film. He wrote the film, and this is when he was in his prime too, right around that time. But I think this movie's hilarious and totally worth watching again on Netflix.
And I haven't seen it in years. I need to revisit it. I always saw it in the $5 bin at Walmart as well. And I was always like, I need to buy this, but I just couldn't bring it myself. But after like you bringing it up and reading over it again, like, it is a funny movie.
Yeah, it's got some really funny stuff.
And the fact that I'm reminded it is a John Hughes film, I think now I need to revisit it and get the more jokes. I'm pretty sure when I was 6 years old when it came out, a lot of those jokes went over my head. But I'm pretty sure nowadays there's going to be some pretty funny stuff. But I love it. I love John Candy growing up.
Yeah.
He was a man, all the way to Cool Runnings. After that, I can't really remember what he's done after
Canadian
that.
Canadian
Bacon? Yeah.
Wow, he did that one, huh?
He did do that.
He did. But after that,
Wagons East.
Did he do Wagons East?
That was his last movie.
That was his last movie before he
died. Chris Farley in that as well?
No, that's
Almost Heroes.
Almost Heroes.
Okay.
But yeah, The Great Outdoors, I think it's a lot of fun. Worth watching again if you haven't seen it in a long time. And if you've never seen it, I still think you're going to find it pretty funny, to be completely honest.
You better.
Yeah. The movie is, it's rated PG. Let's see, on... OK.com, it's at 11 plus or 12 plus.
For age appropriateness?
Yeah, I'd say around there is probably okay.
I said The Way, Way Back I was pulling from my memory.
this
for
one's
the
really,
Great Outdoors.
Really pulling from
While
memory.
I remember laughing a lot in it, I don't remember content at all. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, I'm going to sit here and be like, I don't remember anything offensive at all. And whenever I say that about a movie from the 80s, I watch it again. I was like, whoops. But it's an 11, 12 plus, and, you know, OK.com is usually right around kind of that area, unless it's 16 candles.
Yeah.
Don't trust 16 candles. But, yeah, I'd say right around that age group. But again, it's just a really fun movie and really funny. And if you like John Candy, you're going to love it. And I mean, Dan Aykroyd's good in it too. Great Outdoors. It is a lot of fun. Check it out. It's on Netflix. What else do you have to do? Really? You know, just check it out. Watch it. That's my pick for the week, Netflix. I think these are good picks this week. I think we did well this week.
I think, yeah, I think we did.
We've got The General for Amazon Prime from Travis, a classic. What year was that? The 20s?
Oh, yeah. Don't ask me that. I don't know. When before talkies. Before talkies. Kay. So before the 30s.
So, and then we have more recent 2013 with The Way Way Back and Kurt and Redbox. And then with me, late 80s, John Hughes film The Great Outdoors on Netflix. I wholly support all the picks this week.
Yeah.
Watch them.
I always feel like every time they could pick, I'm bombarded with like 100 questions of like why I picked that movie. So for this day is a little different. I was like, wow. Insidious, huh? Weirdo.
Yeah, Travis almost quit the podcast after you suggested Insidious.
I did.
No, I'm just kidding.
The horror movie, right?
Yeah.
I remember it. What was that again?
Anyway, so there are the picks this week, but there is something we want to talk about, guys. Some news came out this week. It seems like every week now when it comes to movie news, people are just like, yeah, whatever. What about Star Wars? And we actually got some Star Wars Episode 7 news this week that they began filming, which is weird considering that they don't even have the cast all figured out yet.
But it does sound like the script is done. And that's
well, it sounds like
news.
The script is done, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess the most recent pass was done by J.J. Abrams. He
not
had a lot to do with
J.J. Abrams,
it.
But
Lawrence Kasdan.
Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote and directed The Empire Strikes Back.
He didn't direct it, he wrote it.
He wrote it.
He wrote, not did he, okay, because we're going to.
I thought he directed it.
No, Irvin
Kershner. Oh, Kershner, that's right.
Wrote
that's
it.
Right.
I directed it, yeah.
That's right. But Kasdan also wrote Return of the Jedi. Or one of the writers on there.
I think so.
Yeah.
And Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was watching all the special features, and you guys may have as well when you got the Blu-rays, if you got the Blu-rays.
On Raiders?
No, on Star Wars. And he was saying he wanted to kill off Han Solo. This is just a side fact. And Lucas and Spielberg were like, no, we're not killing off
really?
Solo. And he's like, come on, someone has to die here. There's no weight to these movies, you know? There has to be some cost.
It's like Anakin dies. Spoiler. Sorry about that, everybody.
Right. Anyway, I always found that interesting that he wanted to kill off Han Solo.
That is interesting. And I mean, like, turns out this happens more often than we think, because when we talked The Burbs a few weeks ago, apparently in the original script, Tom Hanks's character was supposed to get killed.
Right.
But they loved Tom Hanks so much, they didn't think the audiences would like seeing him die.
Yeah.
And they make a point. I mean, it would have been powerful if Han Solo had been killed, but I also think it would have irked a lot of people at the same time.
He was definitely a favorite character, but all of a sudden you would have wondered about who else is going to go if they kill off a major character
it's
like
true.
That. Then everybody, you're not just waiting for your happy ending.
Right.
And I think that was his point.
Well, you got J.J. Abrams, who made Lost, which just killed characters left and right, so right. Who knows?
And you have someone who wanted to kill Han Solo, so now that we have those two together.
Han Solo's going to die, everybody.
Everyone's going to die.
Just be aware.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford will be in Episode 7, and he will die.
Yep. Nice thing about Abrams, he's very good at keeping things under wraps, so.
Yeah, which is, like, frustrating, but also fantastic.
Yeah.
At least in my point of view.
He actually apologized for keeping Khan under wraps. Did you read that article?
Well, lying about it, yeah.
Yeah,
saying that
he
was a different character.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? If Star Trek Into Darkness is one of his weaker films, then I'm excited to see the movie.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, like all this news coming out and the fact that, again, Abrams is doing it, which I think he can give a really fresh take on it. And the fact to know that Kasdan and he are writing it gets me really excited mm-hmm. because in my, you know, Kasdan wrote what is probably the best Star Wars film. And we can get into discussion about this because Travis is rolling his eyes already. I get for me, the original Star Wars, I would probably go with A New Hope is my favorite. I don't know if it's the best film, but to me it's my favorite because it's the one that actually introduces us to the characters and the world and everything else.
No, but I think you're going on the right track. Like if we were to do this discussion about which was the best. I mean, let's not even talk about fan favorite because I think indisputably Empire is the fan favorite. Am I right? Does anyone dispute that? I think if we took a poll, what is the fan favorite of all the Star Wars movies? I think Empire Strikes Back would win.
Kurt's about
I'd defeat it, but I mean, overall, the fans, yes, but I still think Return of the Jedi is.
Kurt rolled his eyes like, overall, the fans are so stupid.
What do the fans know?
Yeah.
But without disputing, like, popularity contest, I think one of the reasons Empire was the best movie was because of exactly what we're talking about, which is George Lucas. He does episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4,
mm-hmm.
where he's writer and director. And as soon as he steps back from that and allows some collaboration we get The Empire Strikes Back. And we just talked about some of the people. One of the people we didn't talk about that was writing it was Lee Brackett, who was one of the, for her time, was one of the best science fiction writers out there. Everyone loved her. And so the fact that he brings her in ends up making, you know, Empire one of the most philosophical, if not the philosophical, movie of the entire series. And as we talk about how much we love Star Wars and how much we love The Force and how much we love Yoda, this all happens when George Lucas finally steps back. So if we are having that discussion of which is best, I think there's a lot of weight that you can throw at The Empire Strikes Back.
Something that I think is a little unfair to our generation, to be completely honest, is the fact that I don't know about you guys, but when I watched The Empire Strikes Back for the first time, for example, I already knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father, right? I mean, like, because you'd heard stuff and people had mentioned things and it was this pop culture thing. But I'm trying to imagine sitting in that theater on opening day when Empire Strikes Back came out and then hearing that at the end. Like, honestly, like, what it would have done to your brain.
There is a YouTube video of a guy recording his kids and, like, they're unspoiled watching the scene where he says it's their father and their minds are just blown.
They just lose it.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean is I think we kind of miss that. And in all honesty, I think because of that, even though we enjoy Empire and you know, would debate about whether it's the best of the entire franchise, I think we missed out on how great maybe it really is because we didn't get that twist.
Like anyone watching The Sixth Sense now.
Right.
Know, exactly.
Well, I mean, like, even if you don't like that movie, can you, either of you honestly tell me that you sat there and when that happened, you weren't like, oh, my word.
Someone ruined it for me like 10 minutes before.
Oh, no way. Are you serious?
I sat watching that film
no.
with my blood boiling because I knew the ending. No. Anyway, let's not go on The Sixth Sense. But yeah, I think people take Empire for granted, for sure.
Well, Kurt, I want to ask you, why, in your opinion, why is, out of all six that have been made, why is Return of the Jedi that the one, the best one?
Oh, man. You know, I was giving that some thought earlier. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, and I was, John knows, growing up, I mean, I'm a big Star Wars guy. I'm not like, I like the movies. I don't dive into like the extra
read
canon
all the books and stuff.
Stuff that they have, and I get asked stuff about that all the time, and I'm like, I have no idea, but I enjoy the movies, and John knows it since growing up. Like, I really, really love these movies. But I don't know if it's just, there's like kind of a conclusion that I love about it. I don't know if I love those little furry Ewoks. I mean, everything about it was just so awesome. I think Han Solo is so cool in this one. He's cool in all of them. But just the fact, I think you see the transformation. You see Luke as a Jedi. And it's just like, this is what he's supposed to be, you know? And see how fearless he is. And he goes on and takes on his dad.
He is a total rock star when he comes into that movie, like in black and stuff.
Even when he's jumps off that board into going into, I'm having a cramp now, the...
Missed that.
I wonder how you spell.
And R2-D2 shoots out that lightsaber for him. You know?
Yeah.
He flings back. He does a flip. You're just like, oh, man, this is.
Pit.
Yeah, going into the pit. And you're like.
The Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Pit, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're just like here he is. Like, this is the man. And you're just so excited. Beforehand, you know, Empire Strikes Back, you see his training and all the stuff he's going through. But this is just. All comes together. It's just so exciting.
You guys will hate this comparison, but I think it lends credibility to what you're saying, which is it has the burden of bringing these two just mega stellar movies to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it does so in a beautiful way. Everyone loves to, at some level, they love the resolve. It was mm-hmm. done well. And I think another film that carried that burden, wait for it, was The Avengers, where you have Iron Man, you have Thor, you have Captain America's solo movies, and they're all building up. Everyone knows it's coming to this one movie, and for most people, they knocked it out of the park. And I think for that time, Return of the Jedi was that movie because everyone was waiting to see how this concluded, how this all came together. And Return of the Jedi had that burden, and I think they nailed it. So on that level, I think you're right on.
Yeah, don't bring up Avengers and Return of the Jedi.
So Avengers is Return of the Jedi.
Just kidding.
I think something that's good to know too is me personally, Return of the Jedi is probably the most entertaining. in the sense of, like, think about back when you were a kid watching these movies.
Yeah.
Because Return of the Jedi had a lot of action in it, like the speeder bikes, all that stuff. So I think that probably plays a lot into, as you're growing up, like, that's the movie that you kind of related to more so than Empire.
And it has those three action endings. There are three distinct endings happening, and they're all glorious. Like, when you cut away, you're not like, oh. You're like, woohoo.
Great. Yeah. So I think that probably has a lot to play into it. Looking back on the films, you know, Empire, I think, is the best put together film, like a film as a whole.
I agree.
From start to finish, I do think it's the best written, best executed. Also with the twist, I mean, that's not the only twist. I mean, you have the Lando Calrissian stuff in there and like everything else. Like, it kind of messes with your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
That, and I do have to say, it managed to pull off in a way that movies can't seem to do very well anymore. Not all movies, but some movies, to where it's a middle section of this trilogy and they still tell a complete story. They leave you a cliffhanger, but it's not just a big, long preview for the next film.
And I don't think George Lucas would have pulled that off on his own.
No.
I think it's the collaboration that makes it great. And can I just say one more thing about Empire? When you watch action films, and I think that's what this is, I think men are your audience for these films. They're space, you know, action films, and you try to tell a love story, one of two things happen. Either the audience hates you for telling the stupid love story, or you tell the love story by introducing a bikini-clad woman. And then the guys are like, okay, yeah, I'll watch this. And if you know, if you look at like James Bond and stuff, that's how they do it. They introduce just an extremely beautiful woman, and this is our love interest. What Empire Strikes Back did was it told this entire love story without you even really being aware that it was happening. And then at the end, when they drop this I love you scene, you're like, oh, yeah, they totally earned that.
Yeah.
In a way that men weren't like, ugh, why? You know, why are we going back to this? And Princess Leia wasn't bikini clad for a whole other film. So it's not like we were just like, she's hot. Of course, Han would go for her.
Right.
That whole, and one of the other things, I think it's the best I love you scene in cinematic history.
Do you know that was Harrison Ford's idea to be like, I know.
Right, so
that's pretty cool.
That an ad lib ends up, in my opinion, being the best "I love you" scene in cinematic history. That love story they were never able to do, even in Star Wars. If you look at their other attempts at doing love stories, they were catastrophic.
Oh my gosh, Anakin and Padme rolling around in the flowers.
Jeez.
Does everybody else remember that?
Oh, we know.
I remember when Kurt and I saw that movie. We literally laughed out loud when that happened.
Yes,
like legitimately laughed out loud when that happened.
You imagine right now if George Lucas was in charge of this episode 7, the anticipation would be? I wouldn't be that excited.
No. I wouldn't be planning on going.
I never thought I'd be more excited for Disney to be making a movie over George Lucas for Star Wars.
Here's the thing that you can know is going to happen with this movie, since Disney is on board, is they're going to put a lot of money into it, and it will be entertaining.
I agree with that.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if J.J. Abrams wasn't on board and it was just Disney, I might be saying, like, the story might be ho-hum, but it's going to be entertaining. Like, eye candy, it's going to be great. But the fact that we have Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan on board, I think you're actually going to get an intriguing story out of it as well.
Well, they also, when they bring Peter Mayhew back, like, that was one of the other announcements.
As Chewbacca.
That's big deal, because Lucas wasn't even inviting James Earl Jones back to do the voice of Darth Vader. And so the fact that they're actually bringing in original cast members and saying, we care enough about the original Star Wars family, when George Lucas didn't even seem to care enough about the original Star Wars family, they just seemed to actually care about what the fans wanted.
With Disney in charge and George Lucas, he still has some creative input, but I think we all know that it's going to be less and less and less as time goes on. Do you think that they're going to revisit episodes 1, 2, and 3 at some time?
The biggest thing for me was I was hoping J.J. Abrams would figure out a way, a la Star Trek, to completely write
them
off.
Rid
it
of
never
it.
Happened, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Well, what's funny is we talk about Star Wars with such nostalgia, you know, how much we loved it, with such kind of respect, in all honesty. But then all of a sudden we start bringing up episodes 1, 2, and 3, and honestly, like, the whole thing gets thrown out the window. You almost lose some of that respect that you have for the original three because of how poor those first three were.
But to your point, you were bringing up that A New Hope, you know, could have been considered the best of the trilogy. Which I find a tough position to take, because like I pointed out, this was a George Lucas child. However, because he didn't have the money, he didn't have the special effects, he was kind of...
I also don't think he had the creative control.
Really?
Well, he was a first-timer. I mean, he'd done American Graffiti,
right?
You know, and he had his THX 3000, was it? I can't remember. But like his very first film that he did.
Right, 1138.
1138, yeah. Thank you. But with how much money they were putting into this and what a gamble it was, I don't think the studio was just like, have a ball.
But he is an innovator. I'll give him that. He was great stuff, but he just, 1, 2, and 3, he was CGI and too much stuff. Hopefully Abrams brings it back home.
Yeah, he did kind of destroy the franchise, but at the same time, the franchise was born in his head. Yeah, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, he created this whole thing, so.
Right, and even in Empire, what we were just talking about, the beautiful team comes together, but he's still the keeper of the story.
Right.
And they're still going back to him and saying, okay, what happens next?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Well, there you go. We went on a really long time with that, but Star Wars, I mean, you can talk to no end about that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, again, we're looking forward to that. Star Wars Episode 7 is slated to open December of 2015. So with that, something that is coming out much sooner than December 2015, we have Draft Day coming out. And for those of you who don't know, this is a Kevin Costner film where he plays the GM of the Cleveland Browns, of all teams. And it's basically what's going on Draft Day and the wheeling and dealing that he does. Kurt and I got an opportunity to see this, and it was so funny. Walking in, I literally said to Kurt, this is going to be the poor man's version of Moneyball. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Nothing. I mean, if you're thinking there's going to be anything like Moneyball, it's...
No, it's not nearly to that caliber. Yeah. I don't know why, though. It's not a great film by any means, but it managed to keep my attention.
Yeah.
I mean, like, which I surprised me.
We both thought it was going to stink. Like, right. Big time. But it didn't stink as bad as we thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, it has some ridiculous storylines, like trying to keep the whole thing going. And it has a couple of characters where it's like Jar Jar Binks type characters. Like, we're going to throw them in for laughs. And it just makes no sense. And it doesn't land. And it's just really rough. But I guess what kept me interested was the fact that a lot of the movie takes place over the phone. Because, again, it's, you know, different GMs of ball clubs and everything else on the phone doing deals back and forth. And I was surprised as I was like, why am I so interested still? Like, why am I into this still? And I do think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Ivan Reitman was directing it. I know the guy, you know, the same director as Ghostbusters. I know it's been a while since he's had something really great. But even with that, I mean, he's still a storyteller and knows how to put a film together. And I think it shows in Draft Day.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I mean, we're sports fans.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think that element played into it, being like, all right, we'd follow the draft, which is in May this year.
Is it?
Yeah. Huh. And so so I think that aspect of being like, all right, we get to see a little bit behind the scenes what goes on with these general managers. I mean, that's why Moneyball was so fascinating, because you don't really get to look into that world. I mean, we get to see the trades like on ESPN and stuff like that, but we don't see what goes on behind the scenes. And I guess a little bit we get to see what happens at the combine with some of these players, but to see what general managers are going through,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what like kept me a lot of entertained through it, being like, oh, wow, like what's going on behind these scenes?
If you're the type of NFL fan that sits there and watches the draft, you mm-hmm. know, and like every single pick come in. If you're a person who desperately wants to go to Radio City Music Hall in New York and sit there the entire time and watch a draft happen, you'll like this movie. Like, you'll really enjoy this and have a good time with it. It's funny, though, with Moneyball. And Travis, have you seen Moneyball?
I have seen Moneyball.
Okay.
Yeah.
With Moneyball, it's incredibly well written. The dialogue's just fantastic. The acting's really good with Jonah Hill, Brad Pitt. You know, they play off of each other really, really well. Philip Seymour Hoffman's really great in that movie. That has it going for it. But something else that Moneyball did that they did really well, you have this overarching thing of Billy Beane putting together deals, trying this whole new thing with the Athletics. But then you also have this sub-story with he and his daughter. And you find out later that really everything, all of his motivations are really played off of his family and how much he cares about his daughter. Draft Day kind of tries to do the same thing, but instead of being subtle, it just keeps slapping you in the face with it.
Yeah.
It's like they picked up like a big dead fish and they just keep hitting you with it. Which kind of, when I was getting really into it, they'd bring up that kind of a moment again and it managed to just kind of pull me right back out.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that did not work in this movie. But there's enough. Like I said, there's a couple of guys in the theater that were wearing like their NFL jerseys.
Uh-huh.
Afterwards, we heard them being like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And there, so if you're a diehard NFL fan, you're going to probably, you know, especially if you're a Browns fan.
Well, and I've never seen a movie that's so backed by the NFL. I mean, it's all real teams. I mean, Seattle Seahawks, Cleveland Browns, all these teams are players in it. You go to their stadiums, you know, and like see all this different stuff, which was pretty interesting. Again, it's a film that I wouldn't suggest going to spend $7-$12, whatever it is, to go to a movie nowadays to go see. But I would put it up as a Netflix pick, let's say, if it came up at some point. Just like, hey, it's worth sitting there and watching. You know, you got nothing else to do.
When you compare this to Moneyball, because Moneyball was a true story, and so as they were going through these negotiations and going through kind of the clinical side of baseball, you still felt that there was some authenticity to it.
Right.
Did you feel that same authenticity? Like, as you, when you finished the movie, did you think that's probably how it happens? They probably got a really great inside look on how that goes, or did you not really buy into it at that level?
If it wasn't the Browns, I might have. The Browns screw everything up. There was a little bit of that. Not too much, though. I mean, this was very, I don't know, like almost felt very Disney-ish. If Disney made Moneyball, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there is some authenticity there with probably, there's a lot of like kind of last minute decisions, war room type things going on draft day, right? But at the same time, especially what happens like in the climax of the film, while it's kind of entertaining and it gets kind of clever in some ways, you're kind of like, nope, no way. You know, like some people would have to be so stupid, you know, to fall into this kind of a trap and things like that. But at the same time, like it was clever enough where I was watching it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun.
I didn't feel like Moneyball, you had said that the NFL obviously really backed this. And I didn't feel like Moneyball was necessarily backed by Major League Baseball in any way. However, I do remember the WWF backing No Holds Barred. So is this not necessarily Moneyball, but like the No Holds Barred of the NFL?
Kind of, but like in a more dramatic sense. Because Moneyball, you know, it was obviously backed by the MLB in the sense where they got to use these actual people, you know, the Red Sox, the Oakland A's, and, you know, Billy Beane, who works for MLB and stuff. With this one, it was very much like push into your face, like the NFL's good, like we're gonna put Roger Goodell up, the commissioner, and like he's a really nice guy and everybody likes him, you know. They definitely had that agenda that they were pushing. And at the end, I kind of laughed because at the very end, you know, the credits start rolling, it's like directed by Ivan Reitman, and it honestly felt like I was watching Madden 2013 load, as they had like all the cool like snapshots and scenes from real NFL stuff going on, you know. And it kind of did that thing, and I was like, eh, okay.
Well, if you got my No Holds Barred reference, please send us a tweet on Twitter, because I'm curious who you are.
Yeah, there's no real NFL players in this. Like, the teams are the same.
Well, sorry, there is an NFL player. In Arian Foster plays a character. He doesn't play Arian Foster, but he plays one of the potential draft.
But
piece.
Like in Moneyball, they got to use Johnny Damon. They
I see
use,
what you're
like,
saying.
Real players, yeah. They're all like made up drafts. They got to use like Ohio State Buckeyes. Right. You know, they got to use.
I wonder if the
Florida
owner
State.
Of the Browns is really upset because they paint the owner of the Browns. It's Frank Langella that plays the character as just the biggest tool, just jerk guy in the world. So I wonder if that guy's like really the nicest guy in the world, and he's watching like with his like 13 grandkids that he spends every weekend with. He's like, what's going on?
But they're not using real names. Like,
no.
It's not his name.
No. Nope. Yeah. It's obviously just fictitious.
Guess who's in it, Travis?
Hulk Hogan.
Chadwick Boseman, Mr. 42 himself.
Wow.
I do have to say, when we were watching that, I'm like, you know, the kid's a good actor, but he needs to start picking roles that aren't hey, you're another sports guy.
Right.
You know? But yeah, it's not a good movie, but some of it might have been. I literally walked into that theater thinking, like, I'm going to hate this. This is going to be so bad. And I walked out and I was like, it wasn't that bad. So I wonder if just my expectations were so low that that's why maybe I kind of enjoyed it. But at the same time, there are definitely elements. I know for a fact Travis is going to go see this. He's going to see the opening sequence with Jennifer Garner and Kevin Costner. And immediately you're going to go like, John and Curtis are so stupid. stupid. But just wait, when some of the wheeling and dealing starts going, then you'll be like, okay, I can see some of the entertainment value here.
Yeah. I think from here on out, you can just throw the Nanny Diaries card down. I'll concede.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. So, but yeah, there you have it, draft day. I think you have a very reluctant go see it at some point from me and Kurt. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm speaking for you, Curtis.
No, I'll agree with that. Like I said, don't spend $9 in a theater for this, unless you're like a diehard NFL fan and you're like...
Girls, if you're out there and you're an NFL fan and some guy wants to take you on a date,
yeah,
you're not paying for it. Sure, go see it in the theater.
Yeah, but like I said, not great, but not bad. Just, eh. Just kidding.
That's a rousing recommendation for draft day. But yeah, I mean, I think this movie financially is not going to do great. Even though it's the NFL, and I know that the NFL's and the filmmakers are trying to bank on the fact that the NFL is so popular, but the fact that it's based all around draft day and it's just negotiations and stuff, I don't see it doing the money that they're hoping it will.
I'll be surprised if it even gets third place. I think Captain America is going to walk over it, and Divergent and Noah, one of those two is still going to take it over.
The Lego Movie or Frozen's going to end up making more money.
Yeah, it.
And bless his heart, it's been a while since Kevin Costner's put something on the table that's, you know, been a huge box office draw because of him.
Because of him, right? Yeah. I mean, Superman's dad. Well, he was in Man of Steel.
Oh, he was fantastic in that. He was probably acting wise. He was probably the best part of that movie.
Oh yeah.
But he's not. He wasn't the one selling it.
No.
The fact that Superman was technically raised by two Robin Hoods. That sold the movie.
Yeah. Kevin should stick to baseball movies.
Russell Crowe and Kevin Costner.
There you go. I was thinking of the mom.
Travis just made the connection.
Not getting it, yeah.
Yeah, you don't remember when Diane Lane was Robin Hood?
No, I was going for it.
It's a really strange film. Yeah. But there you have it, draft day. It's rated PG-13, headed out into theaters. Yeah, if you're a huge NFL fan again and like you love the draft, yeah, go check it out. If not, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Moneyball instead.
Yeah.
Go rent Moneyball and watch that again because it's a much better film.
Now, what's funny, I felt they had an opportunity here to make this a PG movie, mm-hmm. and they threw in just a couple things.
Well, what's funny is
got an R rating.
Yeah, it originally got an R rating, and they got the PG-13 on an appeal, which was interesting because especially with an R rating from an NFL film, there was no way that movie would have been.
Likewise, had it been a PG, there's no way anyone would have
missed the mark.
Yeah.
I do think, it has like 3 F-bombs in there, though. For a PG-13, which just goes to show again, the MPAA, despite what people think, like if there's this many F-bombs or if there's this many, it's automatically this or it's automatically that. That's not true. That is a wives' tale. It's a myth that doesn't exist. It's just depending on what group of people at the MPAA happen to be watching what movie at what day is really what it comes down to. And draft day is a good proof of that. Because, for example, I think you probably got one group of people watching it one day and gave it an R rating, and then you had the producers of the film throwing a bunch of money towards the MPAA, and you got a new group of people watching it another day, and they felt that it was a PG-13. Travis had something to say.
Well, it just would have brought up a whole new conversation. And
From my standpoint, though, I don't think it's quite an R level, because I think there are a couple of F-bombs. I think one of them is like mouthed or not completely enunciated or something like that, which, let's be honest, it's still basically the same thing. But it's not quite an R, but also I think it's higher than PG-13, which I think comes down to the whole fact of why we have sites like OK.com so we can kind of get a better rating. And I put this like a 15, maybe even a 16, depending on your child.
Yeah.
But there you go. Thanks to everybody so much for listening. We love doing the show. We love having you guys as fans. Make sure to hit us up on Twitter at FlixJunkies. Also check out the website and at OK.com. Get on there, rate some movies. Also got great content on there. But I am John Clyde for Curtis Linnell and Travis Poppleton. We are the Flix Junkies, and we'll catch you next time.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, I am. Haven't I proved that already?